विशेष शून्यवादि प्रशिक्षणादि शीतल ने ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
So as you can see, I'm returned to inflict my contaminating association upon you. Fortunately, Maharaj is still with us to save you all from my polluting influence. So I have no idea where I left off. So
page 9. Oh, I just stuck
you can start. I think
Page 9.
That part I was
talking about. The part you were talking about is?
The part I was talking about was the Western philosophy. I think a little later.
Yeah, because we're just now in the Shloka Nishan.
Okay, you can just continue where you left off.
Okay. Bottom of 9. Sukadeva Goswami announces that he will now recite Srimad Bhagavatam. He begins by glorifying the Bhagavat Purana, Nimisha. This way of opening a holy discourse intended to invoke the all-auspicious personal presence of the Supreme Lord throughout the Sammelan, or assembly of hearers and speakers of the Lord's Granta form, is termed Mangalacharan. He says that one who gives full attention and respect to hearing Srimad Bhagavatam achieves Mukunda Mati, unflinching faith in Lord Mukunda. Constant chanting of the Lord's holy names is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all. Here, doubtless, fearless, then means you're fearless, means that the situation of your existence, the situation of your relationship with the Lord, everything will be fine, right? It will be nice, it will be okay. And doubtless, doubt comes from the mind, because fearless will come from the lack of discrimination, being able to tell the difference between the Lord's position and ours. The doubtless will be coming from the mind actually accepting as the goal, right? Because if you can't see that this is a goal or it's acceptable, the mind doubts, right? So doubting is an element of the mind. So then, this would mean that the mind is satisfied, the intelligence is satisfied. It means whatever goal there is in your life, it's perfectly concluded or found in this unflinching faith in Lord Mukunda. And one's most secure and best position to be in, strongest position, will be as the servant of Lord Mukunda. So this is obtained by the constant chanting. So he opens this with the Mangalacharan, where he's glorifying the Lord's holy names, and the Bhagavatam, which is non-different from the Lord. So the Lord, his names, his qualities, his pastimes, by constantly hearing that, that will be the way that whatever is the problems in the material world, whatever the desires of perfections and spiritual perfections, it can all be obtained through this. Does it make sense? Right? Because here we have these keys, these fearless, doubtless. That'll be the same as, fear and attachment. Right? Because we're attached to something. And if what we're doing won't get that or fulfill that, there's a doubt. Is that understood? So doubting is just another aspect of attachment. Does that make sense? Yeah. What creates fear? Fear is created by not wanting to acknowledge that Krishna is God and we're not. Right? So we're afraid that I'm going to have to surrender to God. That's actually the fear. And so then that will then, the derivatives of that will be, fear for, your physical or other situations, because that is your false identity that you're holding on to. And by losing that, it brings you closer to the point of, I got to accept that God's actually the one and not me. So it's all, that's why the term, you always see this term fearless coming up constantly, especially when they're talking about the position of devotional service and all that. Generally in past times you won't hear it discussed so much, but as far as tattva, that's why it's given and it's always so glorious. The verses that have the doubtless, fearless, or one one freed from fear then, you know, attains all. It's always in a very upbeat position because it means that we have accepted that I am servant of God. So fearlessness, it actually, where it starts to become nicely established is in the Madhyama platform, Nishta. Because they're fixed, that I am servant of God. The neophyte is, I am servant of God when I kind of remember it. And when I'm busy doing what I want to do, then I'm not so servant of God. But in Nishta, it's like that's the determination. So even if one is doing things that one knows is not, they come up by habit, but you can observe them. You know, somebody says something, you get angry, or something happens, and then your attachments come out and all that. So the natural, spontaneous habit of, the lack of good qualities or the lack of, you know, proper performance of devotional activities may come up by habit. And that's not a problem. The problem is whether you catch it afterwards, right? Means here would be another, as we discussed before, about the differences between the uttam and the nityasiddha, because we generally attribute nityasiddha to anything that's spiritual. You know, you're either a nityasiddha or a schmutz. You know, these are the two options. So, who is the one that says, is Kulakshekhar? No, Yamunacharya. Whenever I think of sex life, I spit at the thought. Now, here's an Uttamadhikari saying, whenever I think of sex life. That means the mind by habit, you have to remember, is the mind has been thinking about sex life since time immemorial, you know. And one lifetime of Brahma is 311 trillion years. And who knows how many lives of Brahma we've been here. So that's a lot of practice, right? That's what it does. Right, because eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, it accepts or rejects the options offered. So here's an uttamadhikari that thought of this, because otherwise you also hear the statement, well, if they're actually advanced, they won't think of it. That's because we're impersonalists, and we think that people aren't people, they're machines. And so as you advance, then you become this more kind of like dry, unthinking machine. That's the way the impersonalists look at it. But if you'll note, it's a phenomena. Let's say you have a bunch of people coming into anything else other than, you know, the personal devotional line. They all come in and they're very different people. But with time, they all start becoming the same. They become very nicely institutionalized. That's because the basis is actually impersonal. But you'll find with devotees, because they're looking for spiritual, so they've kind of stepped out of the material, when they all come in, basically all new bhaktas are all basically the same. But you give them time in Krishna consciousness, and they become more and more and more unique as persons. So we can understand that advanced means individual, not advanced means, you know, a nice little square box on your computer that you can, you know, label and everything works out very, very nice. Does that make some sense? So here then, this doubtless and fearless, these you'll see constantly coming up. Because doubt means the mind is caught, and the fearless means we've actually our identity. You know, so the ego has changed. And of the two, the fearless is the most central here. Because when you change the identity, false ego is the catalyst for creation. We'll find that out later. Means you take pradhan, you add into it false ego, you get mahatattva. You add it in again, then you get the mundane, it means the element false ego. You add it again, you get intelligence. You add it again, you get mind. You add it again, you get ether. So each time, so that's why it gets gross, because there's more false ego in it. So someone who's more physically attached has a greater ego than someone who's less attached on that level. Does that make some sense? So this fearless being freed, you change your identity. Then within your identity, you have doubts on being able to obtain happiness according to what you perceive as your identity. Right? It means, this is my identity, this is what I want to get. This method, I don't think is going to get it. I doubt it. Does that make sense? Or I have it, but then there's a doubt whether I'll be able to keep it. Then that fearlessness, because by that, then that will project a doubt. Right? Does that make some sense? So these are two key words that you'll see come up again and again and again, and it's not just random words. So doubtless, what is it? What's the other? Misgiving. Misgiving means it's deeply rooted. Doubt means it's intelligence and mind mixed. Misgiving means it's purely mind. There's no intelligence or reason working there at all. Like that.
Yeah, I'd like to also add, where Maharaj said that this notion that a pure devotee will never have the slightest thought of any type of sense gratification cross his mind. Maharaj described that as impersonalism. So impersonalism means Mayavad, and Mayavad literally means materialism, because Maya is a material energy. Vad, Prabhupada often said, means ism, once translated as one who sticks to Maya. So not only is it Mayavad in the sense of negationism, but why is he negating in the first place? Is because he's actually thinking he is this body. So we're starting with, rather than Mayavad, what is known as Dehatmavad, thinking myself to be the body. And so in that Dehatmavad concept, you see, we introduce this idea of being a pure devotee, so then we get this very confused notion. I am the body, but if I'm the pure devotee, then everything in this body should be pure. You see? Everything should be working purely. But the very fact, you know, it's immediately discounted, because the very fact that one is a dehatmavadi, identifying with the body, taking the body to be the self, means that there cannot be pure consciousness. So the fact is that a pure devotee, he understands the difference between the soul, pure spirit soul, as eternal servant of Krishna, and the material body as the energy of Krishna, which is to be engaged in Krishna's service. This is a kind of Veda-Abheda relationship, in the sense that both the spirit soul and the body are prakriti. That means the Lord's own energy, meant for nothing else except His service. But obviously there is also a difference in that the spirit soul is jivatma, it is living, and the body is, as Prabhupada so often said, it is always dead. It is the achit shakti of the Lord. But behind this achit shakti of the Lord is the chit potency of Goddess Lakshmi. And this is explained very nicely in the sixth canto, chapter 9, prayers given by who is it? Is it Kardama Muni? I believe it's Kardama Muni.
Bindu Sarovar to Vishnu? At Bindu Sarovar to Vishnu?
No, it's Kasyapa Muni, to his wife Diti. Who was desirous of having a child who could kill Indra. And this was a demoniac desire. So he was very shocked by this. So he decided to, in a very gentle but very firm way, trick her into engaging in the devotional service of the Lord by taking up what is known as the Payobrata ceremony, Payobrata, which is a brata that Vaishnavas take. And he told her that if you take this up very seriously, then you will get the kind of child that you want. But as a matter of fact, by taking this Vaishnava vrat, she actually got a child who's a pure devotee of the Lord. And that made her happy, and that made Indra happy, that made everyone happy, and then she realized at the end the foolishness of her original desire. So, in presenting this Payobrata vow to his wife, the Lord speaks to Diti about the importance of worship of Shri Lakshmi Narayan. And this is a very interesting portion of the Srimad Bhagavatam, because it is a kind of archana padati. In fact, it is the condensed form of archana padati of the divine couple, but in the form of Lakshmi Narayan. And there, Kasyapa Muni, he declares in one verse that Lakshmi is both the Shukshma, the spiritual, Shukshma means most subtle, transcendental, spiritual form of the Lord, and at the same time, Mama Maya Dharatyaya. He uses this exact term that's found in the Bhagavad Gita, that she is my material energy, which is so difficult to overcome. Simultaneously, she is both at once my Shukshma potency, my eternal internal potency, Yoga Maya, and at the same time she is Mahamaya. And therefore, he concludes, she's very difficult to understand. Very difficult to understand her position. So, and this difference, it depends on the jiva. It depends on how the jiva is approaching her. So this is a kind of hint to Diti, that if you approach my energy in the way that you are approaching her, desiring a son who is capable of killing Indra, that's a demoniac desire, and she is going to deal with you as a demon, as a daitya, and that's not very good. You don't want the all-powerful, because I never forget this one lecture where Srila Prabhupada declared that the energy of the Lord, because she is his energy, she is just as powerful as the Lord. The only difference being is that her bhav, her mood is, I am devotee of the Lord. Prabhupada is explaining it as almost giving the suggestion that it is by her choice she chooses to be a devotee of the Lord. Otherwise, she's just as powerful as the Lord. It's similar to what she said, what Srila Prabhupada says about the Vishnu Dutas in the Ajamil pastime, that they could come to this world and declare themselves to be Vishnu, and who could tell the difference among us? Who could tell the difference? They could come and say, we're Vishnu, and they're so powerful, we'd be forced to acknowledge, yes, we'd be forced to bow down and offer obeisances to them as Vishnu. How could we tell the difference? But because this is the glory of the devotees, they never do that. Because that's cheating, and devotees are the highest apex of transcendental morality, so therefore they would never do that. The demons would do that. You take a demon and you give him the form of a Vishnu Duta, and he'd go, oh, great! You know, oh, wonderful, great opportunity. Okay, here I am. I'm the avatar, everyone has to bow down to me. he'd really live it up, you see. Or you take a demoness and give her the form of Mahalakshmi, and same thing, she'd be declaring herself to be the supreme. But Lakshmiji never does that. She is always in the mood of the humble servant of the Lord. But she responds, she reciprocates. If that's what you want, if you want to be a demon, all right, I'll give you the facility to be a demon, but that's not going to make you happy. In fact, quite the opposite. So that's Kasyapa Muni's warning to his wife right there, Diti. So, the transcendental energy of the Lord actually plays. This is the point. If we want, then the transcendental, the shukshma sharira, the transcendental form of the Lord will play as the material energy. That's all the material energy is. You see, therefore, the Prabhupada explains that. There's that Upanishadic statement, sarvam kalv idam brahma. Everything is actually Brahman. Everything is actually transcendental potency. Actually, there is no material energy at all. But because we want it, therefore the material energy plays that role. Just like God is Kali. I often tell this when Prabhupada named our God sister, who wrote that nice book, Srila Prabhupada is Coming, Mahamaya Devi Dasi. Then that was in Washington, D.C. temple in the early 70s. And when Prabhupada gave her that name, you could hear a pin drop. You know, everyone was like, why would Prabhupada give her that name? And Prabhupada smiled and he looked at everyone and he said that, now, depending on how you interpret the tape, because it's Prabhupada speaking, not Prabhupada writing. So either Prabhupada said, and she herself, Ma Maya Devi herself understands it. I've heard the tape too. So to me it's questionable. But either way, it doesn't matter. But we'll take her version first, because it's her after all. She got the name. And Prabhupada said this to her, so we have to take her version as being primary. So she said this, that Prabhupada said that this is another phase of Srimati Radharani, that Mahamaya, who is famous in Bengal as goddess Kali, that is how she is most often worshipped in this part of India, and Assam also. They worship her as goddess Kali, which Srila Prabhupada says is the destructive feature or the amangal feature, inauspicious feature of the material energy. But somehow these fools think that by worshipping the most inauspicious feature of the material energy, they're going to get something auspicious. So don't ask me, please don't ask me the logic. I don't understand it. But anyway, they somehow have worked it out in their heads. And Prabhupada explained that this is, in any case, goddess Kali is another phase of Srimati Radharani. Just like Purnima is a phase of the moon, and Amavasya is a phase of the same moon. It's not a different moon planet. It's not a different planet in the sky that's completely dark. It's the same, but she's showing a different phase of herself. Now, when I heard the tape, I thought that Prabhupada was saying face. Because the way Prabhupada speaks, so sometimes the way he would say face and phase, they almost sound exactly the same. So I always thought that Prabhupada said face. But in any case, it's like arguing 2 plus 2 is 4. No, 3 plus 1 is 4. You know, getting into a big argument about that. You know, it really makes no difference because the result is the same. So whether you say phase or face, the result is the same. So face, yes. Srimati Radharani shows the face of Goddess Kali. For who? For the devotees? No. Not for the devotees. Just like Lord Krishna showed the Vishwarupa. For the devotees? No. For Arjuna? No. Arjuna requested to see the Vishwarupa, but Prabhupada explains very clearly, to convince the materialists who might have doubt that this Krishna, who is acting as Arjuna's charioteer, charioteer immediately means inferior position in the mundane sense, the mundane point of view. So how can this Sri Krishna be the absolute personality of Godhead if he's acting as charioteer? So that is why Arjuna asked Krishna to show that universal form, because who else can show the Vishwarupa except Supreme Bhagavan, Param Brahma? So for the same reason, Srimati Radharani is showing the form of Goddess Kali, the insurmountable Mama Maya Duratyaya. No one can overcome her. She defeated Mahishasur, who is the most powerful demon of his time. You see. So, what was my conclusion?
Chit potency
acting as achit potency. That's the point. It's an act. It's a drama. This whole material world, that's why it's also called in Bhagavatam, stiti, how does it start? Stiti means maintenance, so.
Srishti,
creation, stiti, maintenance, pralaya, destruction, lila. It is also a lila. It's another lila of the Lord. Another pastime of the Lord. Enacted by the chit potency, by the spiritual potency, but the spiritual potency, and this is made so clear, this is why these prayers by Kasyapa to Diti are so nice. They're only about 7-8 prayers, very nice to memorize, but if you memorize them, it's like the whole Bhagavad philosophy. You see, and it's in terms of the divine couple, that's what's so nice. In fact, it's another universal form. You know, I often say this, everyone talks about the fifth canto, scratching their head, fifth canto, so hard to figure out, and I say, well, there's at least a half a dozen Vishwarupas in the Bhagavatam. And this is another one, Lakshmi Narayan as the Vishwarup, you see, as the Virat or Viraj. Actually, I was reading about this morning before I came to class. And the term Viraj is actually used. And the Viraj actually means the form of Lakshmi Narayan.
Yeah.
They're called Viraj.
Viraj.
There's another term. I think it's apava, where this is when, because sometimes it's said the Lord takes the role of Brahma, and then in that form the Lord is called apava. I believe that's the term, if I remember correctly, which means he sports with himself. He sports with himself and divides into male and female. And then in those two, then he produces living entities as Lakshmi and Narayan. He does this only when there's no jiva to take the role of Brahma. Then he takes the role and he has a special terminology, apava. And then That is also known as viraj. When a pava appears, they divide as pava divides as male and female, and sports in loving pastimes. Sports in loving pastimes and produces materially conditioned living entity. This is really mind blowing. Because we're speaking of the chit potency. We're not speaking of anything else but the material, the transcendental potency. They sport together and they produce materially conditioned living entities. So, you know, that's a real, you know, you really realize that you have a pea brain when you read that.
Yes. In Manusamhita, then Brahma is saying that after the primary creation, then after Garbhodakshay Vishnu, then he expands as Viraj, which is half male, half female. Uh-huh. He says, and I'm born from that.
Yes. You know. Yeah, exactly.
Who said I'm born from that?
Brahma. Yeah, he says that Manusamhita.
That form of the Lord is half male, half female.
But sometimes Brahma is not even there because there is no qualified Brahma, so Apava does the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Lakshmi and Narayan, they just... They're actually having transcendental pastimes. And that's the point. If one has spiritual vision, then one sees this all as the shukshma. This is the spiritual world unfolding. This is a mystery, and the mystery is actually brought out in the second canto, when Brahma received the divine eyes to see the Lord. Then he saw the Lord of Vaikuntha. He saw his energies, his creative energies, as the residence of Vaikuntha. That's that verse where he said, where it says, Brahma saw the Lord, he saw, what is it, the 4, the 16, these numbers are given.
He gives all those numbers.
4 meaning false ego, prakriti, I forget the other two, anyway. And the 16 are the shodhishakal, and there's a few other mentions. So these are clearly constituents of material energy, but he sees them in their original form as residents of Vaikuntha. In other words, he sees, instead of false ego, he sees Lord Shiva, Sadashiva. You see, instead of Prakriti, he sees Goddess Lakshmi. You see, instead of seeing the material version, he sees the spiritual version. So that's with transcendental eyes. And if one has materialized, then one sees the material creation. So it's up to us. That's why Prabhupada, in this second canto, you'll read later on, this amazing statement where he says the energy from which the whole material creation is drawn is the marginal potency. In other words, the Lord draws out of the marginal potency the needed energy to create the material world. He doesn't draw from his own internal potency. He draws from the marginal potency. Because that's what the marginal potency wants. Prabhupada gives this example of penitentiary. He says, do you think the government enjoys, you know, putting aside money in the treasury, they collect taxes, and they have to put aside a lot of money, especially nowadays in Kali Yuga, for penitentiaries, for legal system. You see, penitentiary, court system, Justice Department, FBI in America, whole thing, costing millions and millions of... You think the government enjoys that? The government relishes? Oh, great. No, they don't like it, but they have to do it. Why? Because there's so many rascals in society. You see? There's so many rascals, so therefore they're forced to do it. So actually the energy behind the penal system or the penitentiary system, the justice system, are the criminals. The energy is the criminals. not the government itself.
It comes from the taxes of the people.
Hmm?
It comes from the taxes of the people, the same as the Hussein from the Tatasta energy comes.
Yeah. And they have to spend it in that way because so many of these people are actually not paying taxes. They're criminals.
There's actually evidence for in this one in the Purusha Sutta itself. He says, Yerane Nati Rohati means he expanded himself to fulfill the desire of the living and the enjoying propensity of the living entity. Anandi refers as a enjoying propensity. Mm. So that was a cause reason, the main reason why the whole creation happened. It's not in the second shloka.
Yeah.
This
is from what scripture?
Purusha
Sutta. So
it's in the beginning of the
Bhagavatam's commentary on Vedanta, Vedanta's commentary on Upanishads, Upanishads' commentary on Vedas, of which the leading hymn is the Purusha Sukta.
Yeah, well, it's said that the whole Vedas expands from Purusha Sukta.
Yeah.
So all the elements in the philosophy and that will be in the Purusha Sukta.
Yeah. This is the point. This is why it is stated, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Everything is Brahman. There really is no matter. This is actually our contaminated vision because we want to enjoy. Therefore, just like Lord Krishna took the form of Lord Buddha to teach atheism, because there were so many people who wanted it. They were killing animals, and it is, as it is stated, the Lord, out of compassion upon the animals, he wanted to stop that. But that's the most he could do. Because as Prabhupada gave this beautiful analogy, just like mothers will know, parents will know. If a child is, nuts, sometimes just children go crazy. around here in this guru pool, I see it practically every day.
No, but you're saying that there's a sane state that they could then transform into craziness from.
Yeah, it seems to be the constant.
So therefore, the kids
constant
are
state
enormous.
Of consciousness here. Anyway, not everyone. Chaitanya is a very nice boy.
Marginally crazy.
But others, too, they just can't help it. They just have to screech and they have to, make insane sounds. And they just can't help it. And if you tell them to stop, they can stop for 5 seconds and then again, ah, woo, my, ah. They just can't help themselves, And so anyway, what can we do? Yeah, so that's what Krishna thinks. What can I do? So he comes as Lord Buddha, So they can't help themselves. They can't stop it. They have to do nonsense. So at least I'll get them to stop killing animals. At least I'll get them to stop doing the worst things. And Prabhupada said, so because they're bad children, just like a mother, when children are very naughty, she will come and say, sit down. Sit down. And be quiet. So Lord Buddha came and said, sit down and meditate. And that they could do. All right. That much they could do. They could sit down and meditate for a little while. I mean, if you know the history of Buddhism, it didn't last very long. Lord Buddha himself said, my Dharma will only last for 1,000 years. And then Ananda, his first disciple, came to him and with folded hands and said, dear Lord, there are many Marjis also who want to join and become nuns. And then Buddha said, well, all right, let him in, but then my Dharma is only going to last 500 years. That's in the Buddhist Shastra itself, so even the Buddhists themselves admit it. And this religion, Buddhism, they calculate Buddha appeared 2,500 years ago, so
Almost for 1,000 years.
So you know it's obsolete. Where you know whatever you go to Nepal, which is half Buddhist, half Hindu, and well, we don't have to talk about what the Nepalese and the tourists are up to there, but they're certainly not in samadhi in the normal sense. They are in some kind of trance, but it is a drug-induced trance, which they try to pass off as some kind of Buddhistic meditation, intoxication. So that's what it's degraded into. So, but that's Krishna, you see. Krishna is Lord Buddha. And similarly, Goddess Srimati Radharani, she appears as Kali, as Goddess Kali. And Prabhupada said very graphically, she appears in this fearsome form. Actually, he was commenting on, are there any nationalistic Bengalis here right now? So if there are, I won't mention the name. If there aren't, I'll mention the name. Okay, so I'll mention the name. Ramakrishna. So Ramakrishna, of course, he's well known among traditional, you can still find families of traditional Bengali Vaishnavas today. That means they're through their, you know, they've kept Gaudiya Vaishnavism in their family despite that degrading influence, that cloud of Ramakrishna, so-called Vedanta. Prabhupada himself said, when he was invited to the Ramakrishna Society in Boston, they gave him the seat, the big, their equivalent of the Vyasasan, which when their swamis come, they sit on this big seat. And then just behind there's a picture of Ramakrishna. And Prabhupada opened the lecture by turning his head and nodding in that direction, and his first words were, "Because of this man, all of Bengal went to hell." Open the election. So Prabhupada pulled no punches. So anyway, nationalistic. It's not only Bengalis, actually. Those who are Brahma Bandhus, those who are proud of being Brahmins, I've seen in Maharashtra, other places, they don't like it when Ramakrishna is criticized because he's a Brahmana, you see. We shouldn't criticize him. But he tried to replace Krishna with Goddess Kali. He tried to make Goddess Kali into the Supreme Brahma. And Prabhupada commented, he said, "Yes, this is for lusty men." He said, "Lusty men, they like to worship women." And as a matter of fact, this name I won't mention to avoid offense because he's a widely respected Vaishnava in Vrindavan, not of the Gaudiya Mart, but anyway, I won't say any more. But he is a Vaishnava to whom ISKCON devotees, I know, I've never gone and I will never go, but ISKCON devotees do go sometimes to discuss finer points of Shastra, but he's the one who made the statement to one of my godbrothers that therefore in India we worship women. The original worship of woman is worship of Radharani. And therefore we worship women in India. You see. It's a very wrong conclusion. Because that means confusion of apara prakriti with para prakriti. You see. But so even Vaishnavas are doing, so-called, are doing that. So what to speak of people like Ramakrishna? Prabhupada, he said clearly, this is for lusty fellows. Lusty fellows. They like that, and so, just like atheists, they like it when God appears as the supreme atheist in the Vishnu Sahasranam. There are specific, see, because Vishnu Sahasranam is a very interesting collection of names of Vishnu, because there are general names applicable to all forms of Vishnu, but then there are specific names for particular avatars, and there are some names for the Buddha avatar. And one of them, now I don't quite remember it, but it is something like Sarvavit Vijaya. Sarvavit Vijaya. Sarvavit means one who knows all the Vedas. So the Buddha could defeat, he defeated those who knew all the Vedas backwards and forwards. Those Vedanta scholars who knew every shloka, every word of the Vedas, and the Vedangas, and the commentaries, and everything backwards and forwards, Lord Buddhadev turned them into mush. He just pulverized them. Just, you know, we say alusida. Turned them into alusida. With his arguments, they couldn't stand before him, because he's God. He's Krishna. And if Krishna wants to argue atheism, you may know all the Vedas, but you just can't. Just no way, you see. So similarly, if Srimati Radharani wants to appear as God as Kali, there's just no way, you know. There's, you know, nothing you can do about it, you know. So, but Prabhupada said her purpose is mass destruction. Her purpose is she's the original punk girl. I mean, she beats out all the, you know, these punk girls. She's got them all beat. There's no punk girl who, you know, goes to the nightclub wearing a mini dress of severed arms. Right there, she's got them all beat. That's her dress, you know. Severed forearms. No one does. And garland of skulls, you see. No one. Three eyes. No punk girl can match that. It is said goddess Tamasi, whose form of Durga, who appears along with Sudarshan Chakra when he manifests as the wheel of time. That's another thing. Sudarshan Chakra. You know, Sudarshan Chakra is so glorious. In our Sampradaya, there doesn't seem to be much mention of him, but actually he's so glorified. For instance, this is the ninth canto. He's actually glorified in one verse by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That glorification is there. He's so much glorified in Sri Sampradaya. But actually, he's equally glorified in our Sampradaya, but just in less verses, that's all. But in terms of quality, Sudarshan Chakra is just as much glorified. So Sudarshan Chakra, it is said about him that the Lord only uses him as a weapon as the last resort. Why? Because Sudarshan Chakra is a special name, Achyuta Priya. He is the dearest devotee of Lord Achyuta. And now Sudarshan Chakra, he moves faster than the speed of mind. I mean, he moves. It's like quantum physics. You know, it's he's there and back before the second hand of the clock can even tick once. You know, he's there and back. But in that time, the Lord feels so much separation from him that his heart is almost breaking. So that's why Sudarshan Chakra is only the weapon of last resort. The Lord would sooner use other weapons, you know, than his Sudarshan Chakra, because he has to send away Sudarshan. And then Sudarshan cuts off the head and comes back. And in that time, the Lord is like so much missing. Oh, where is my Sudarshan? Where is he? Because actually, Sudarshan being Kriya Shakti, he's non-different from Lord Balaram. So, our Krishna, our temple in Vrindavan, Krishna Balaram temple, is the too representative of the relationship between not only Krishna and Balaram, but Krishna and Sudarshan Chakra. They're embracing one another. And so the Lord does not like to be separated from Sudarshan even for the quantum instant. Less than an instant. I mean, it's not even, it can't even be measured in terms of time, but separation is still there. So that's why he is what? The last resort. So, but for the demons, Sudarshan Chakra is the wheel of time. For the demons, the demons in their Bila Svarga, it's like their heaven. Everything is going wonderful, but Sudarshan comes from time to time, and all their wives have abortions, spontaneous abortions out of fear. You know, in other words, he ruins their day. He, as they say, he really rains on their parade. Just to show them who's boss, he comes from time to time. Just to spoil their fun. And so Goddess Kali comes, Prabhupada says, she is so beautiful in that blackish form, punky form, original, Adi Punkini form. She's so beautiful and attractive to a certain class of men that they all flock, and then she destroys them all. That's why you have Hiroshima, that's why you have plane crashes, that's why you have earthquakes, 20,000, 50,000, that's why you have typhoons. Actually, here's an interesting hint. The word typhoon in Hebrew is a Hebrew word. Shoot those telephones. The Hebrew word is tephon, I believe, which is related to the Greek word typhoon, which goes back to the Babylonian word Tiamat. And Tiamat means chaos. Tiamat is a feminine goddess of darkness and destruction. Tiamat is the Babylonian form of Kali. And that name actually appears in Hebrewized form in Genesis. That's therefore the Genesis of Genesis. As I told Maharaj, I'm going to write a book called The Genesis of Genesis. So, it talks about in Genesis, the Lord surveyed the depth of the ocean. And the Hebrew word for the depth of the ocean traces back to Tiamat, which is the Babylonian name for goddess Kali. So this is the same thing in Srimad Bhagavatam. The Lord glanced at material energy, and out of his glance came the Kala Shashiksha, the time factor. Out of his glance, the time factor, and she set the whole creation into motion, and she also destroys it. So that's the Genesis of Genesis. That's just a preview of our orientation book that we will be writing soon. I was speaking with Maharaj, what was it, this morning?
Yesterday.
Yeah, this morning. So these things, we have done a careful research of the Babylonian scriptures and found out all these wonderful mysteries. So they will all be there. Many other interesting and shocking truths of history that are kept hidden. Or anyway, I've yakked enough. Maharaj, take over. I haven't been here for so many days. Therefore, I have to have my fun.
It means this ability to accommodate the two without confusion. Because it's like, if you're going to confuse the spirit, means, in other words, the material energy is actually the Lord's energy, but by our perception, because we want to enjoy it, therefore it is entitled material, because then it will act in that particular way, it will give these responses. So, and then it's very clear, there's spiritual, there's material, and then material has its weaknesses, spiritual doesn't. So spiritual is the desired endeavor. So, but as one advances to bridge the gap, because we are conditioned and we only deal with material energy, then we get the key here that it's non-different. But depending on how we perceive it, it will act in one way or the other. But it's important to maintain that same distinction, because otherwise, then if we go, well, it's spiritual, so it doesn't matter if I enjoy it, then that's worse than being a regular materialist. Because a regular materialist is just trying to enjoy material energy as described. Ravana is trying to enjoy the spiritual energy. So that's worse. Therefore, this point is only brought out so that it is a key to utilizing that element of the universal form, is that it's non-different. The male, female, and the material and spiritual non-different. So it is, can very easily be engaged in the Lord's service. But if we think, well, actually it's spiritual and that, so it doesn't matter all my attachments and all my mundanities, then at that time, then Maya's got you even more, because it said it's for lusty fellows.
Yes.
Like that. So she's, it's, that's why this angle is not, we don't take this as our main stand, our main presentation, because it requires discrimination to be able to appreciate that. And the general, when one is as a preaching mission, then you're always contacting those who have not necessarily developed much discrimination. So for preaching, it's a matter of, here's material, here's spiritual, this, what you're looking for is actually spiritual. You know. But, yeah, does that make sense?
Even comparatively, again, back to Genesis of Genesis, if you look at, you know, because how many adherents of the older, not Gurukulis are exempt from this question, but how many here learn that Mesopotamia is a cradle of civilization? Show your hands. Yeah. So first of all, that's nonsense. And secondly, the gods of Mesopotamia, I mean, you've got one, there's one so-called pastime where you've got the god Enki. He's the younger son of the sun. Younger son of the sun god. And so he takes as his wife, I think, Earth, or the lord of, or the goddess of, anyway, the goddess of the earth, or the goddess of some aspect of the earth. She becomes his wife. And of course, they produce a child, a daughter, and then he comes back later to visit his wife, but his wife isn't there, the daughter's there. So, because the daughter, you know, just as we read in the Bhagavatam, the children of demigods grew up very quick, you know, so she grew up in 9 days. So, she looked just like his wife. I mean, he knew it was her daughter. It was his daughter, but he had sex with her anyway. So she had a daughter. Then he came back a few days later and had sex with that daughter. And then she had a daughter. And then he came, you know, so I don't know, there's about sixfold. Now, you never find anything like this in the Vedic scriptures. You may find Brahma becoming enamored with his daughter, but it's a scandal. And, you know, he's corrected. Even Brahma himself accepts correction, and he throws off that body. But in the Babylonian scriptures or the Greek scriptures, they just go on and on and on and on until finally, you know, it's a reflection of malicious society. Until finally somebody, you know, gets so angry that, you know, this guy won't leave my wife alone or whatever. And so he kills, you know, one of the demigods kills another demigod. And then that out of that demigod's body, then so many things are produced. This is how Kronos, I believe it's Kronos, the god of time, in Greek mythology, was killed. It's a whole horrible story. He was eating his own children. You know, it's barbaric. Barbaric. So that's another thing. This is the genesis of Genesis. It's uncivilized. These, not only for lusty fellows, but it's for psychotic fellows, psychopathic fellows. Therefore, there's this wonderful book, one of my favorite Karmi books. It's called "Whom the Gods Would Destroy." It's from a Greek saying, "Vult Deus Pedera Dementat Prius," whom the gods would destroy, the first make mad. And that's the story of Kali Yuga, and that's why there's a book that's been censored out of the Bible, just along with what Maharaj was saying, that will be in our Genesis of Genesis. A book censored out of the Old Testament called the Book of Enoch, which is describing the beginning of Kali Yuga, which means the lesser demigods, because the personality of Kali is a Gandharva. And he starts messing around with the women of Earth and producing all kinds of strange mutant children who have a very very, very strong propensity for sense gratification. But not only him, he has a whole host of followers. And they're all named in the Book of Enoch. The whole thing is described. And the Catholic Church, they cut this book out of the Bible because it's showing the angels of God falling down. And that was just too much, you see. So stay tuned for this upcoming. This is going to be our orientation book, the first book you have to read. The book that will, if you have, you know, because sometimes I've met devotees who sentimentally, you know, sometimes I've heard devotees say, when there's been some dispute about the appearance of Jesus Christ in the world, they've said things like, "Well, just stick to Shastra, Prabhu," meaning Shastra, meaning the New Testament. Well, got anything like that in your heart, this book is going to rip it right out and throw it in the garbage. And everything that's going to be in this book is going to be absolutely, to the nth degree, researched.
Your Revelations. Book of
Revelations. Yeah, the Book of Revelations of the Revelations. The Genesis of the Genesis. So that's my advertisement. Stay tuned. Coming to your local bookshop soon. Well, not so soon. I have to write it first. Collect all the materials first. Still stuff coming on the way from the west. Okay, anyway, we're way over time. Thank you very much. Tomorrow I will be less talkative.
Well, then we don't have to advertise.
Give a Prabhupada ki jai. Bhagavatam.